अज्ञानतरं दशाग्रन्थनं श्रुतचक्षुरुदमिदं श्रीचैतन्यमनोविष्टं स्थापितं येनोत्तरे स्वयं रूपाकरं मयं ददति स्वपरमिकं वञ्चकौपद्रव्यश्च कृपासिन्धुमेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतग्रन्थ हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे प्रेम प्रेम प्रभु निर्माय श्रीपुरुष ओम सदा सदस्मकृशिष्टमान ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय
Chapter 24 of Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. And that's that yesterday we were reading text 71, and we actually completed only half of it. So I don't know if you want to go to the next text or no. I mean, we read the whole purport, but we haven't finished discussing all the points. So, okay, so probably we won't have opportunity to reflect on 71. It's a very interesting text. Anyway, Bhagavatam is full of very interesting verses.
इदमहापुरस्मकम् इदमहापुरस्मकम् भगवान् विश्वसिक्पते भगवान् विश्वसिक्पते ब्रह्मदिनाम् आत्मजदाम् ब्रिग्वदिनामस्मजनम् शिश्रिक्षु संशिश्रिक्षतम् शिश्रिक्षु संशिक्षताम् इदमहापुरास्मकम् भगवान् विश्वसिक्पते ऋग्वादिनामात्मजनम् शिश्रिक्षु संशिश्रिक्षतम्
इदम्
दिस्
आह
सत्
पुरा
फॉर्मरली
अस्मकम् अन्तोऽस्
the Lord,
Vishwasrik, the creators of the universe, Patihi,
Master,
Brigvadinam, of the great sages headed by Brigu,
Atmajanam,
of his sons, Sistrikshu,
desirous of creating.
Samstrisikshatam, who are in charge of creation. Translation purport by Yajivanandra Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Kida. This prayer was first spoken to us by Lord Brahma, the master of all
creators. The creators headed by Bhrigu were instructed in these prayers because they wanted to create. Lord Brahma was created by Lord Vishnu, then Lord Brahma created Lord Shiva and other great sages headed by Bhrigu Muni. These great sages included Bhrigu, Maharishi, Atreya, Vasishtha and others. All these great sages were in charge of creating population. Since there were not very many living entities in the beginning, Vishnu entrusted Brahma with the business of creation. And Brahma, in his turn, created many hundreds and thousands of demigods and great sages to continue with the creation. At the same time, Lord Brahma cautioned all his sons and disciples by reciting the prayers now recited by Lord Shiva. The material creation means material engagement, but material engagements can be counteracted if we always remember our relationship with the Lord, as that relationship is described in these prayers recited by Lord Shiva. In this way, we can remain constantly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, despite our engagement in the creation, we cannot be deviated from the path of Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness movement is especially meant for this purpose. In this material world, everyone is engaged in some particular occupational duty which is prescribed in the Varnashram Dharma. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras and everyone are engaged in their occupational duty, but if one remembers his first duty, keeping in constant contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything will be successful if one simply executes the rules and regulations of the Varnashram Dharma in the role of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra and keeps busy and does not remember one's eternal relationship with the Lord. One's business and activities, as well as occupational duties, will simply be a waste of time. This is concerned in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bandhu 8. Dharma sanushtita pumsa isvaksana katasya patayet yadiratim samagat kevalam. The conclusion is that even if one is busy executing his occupational duty, his business, in Krishna consciousness need not be hampered. He has simply to execute the devotional service of Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing, chanting and remembering. One need not abandon his occupational duty. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:46, Yada pravritir bhutanam yana sarvam idam tatam svakarmanatam abhyacharsitim vidhatimanubhava. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, man can, in the performance of his own duty, attain perfection. Thus, one can continue with his occupational duty, but if he worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Lord Shiva here in prescribes, he attains his perfection of life. Sanushtitasya dharmasya samsidit hari toshanam bhagavatam 1:13. We should continue executing our occupational duties, but if we try to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by our duties, then our lives will be perfect. Hare Krishna. So this is a perfect illustration to what we've spoken yesterday at our seminar. Idamaha Purasmakam Bhagavadis Vasikpati Bhrigu Adinamakamacham Sasviksu Sasvikshatam. This prayer was first spoken to us by Lord Brahma, the master of all creators. The creators, headed by Bhrigu, were instructed in this prayer because he wanted to create. So, Sisrikshu, that is the most used word in this verse, means create, but actually
we can't really create because everything is already created by the Lord. And we're just using the elements to assemble them in our own way. In the same way as children, they assemble different things from the jigsaw puzzle, right? But it's already been created by adults, by some company. And so, there is one joke about it, that one scientist challenged God. He said, with our scientific advancement, we could do anything you do. And then the man said, God said, can you create a man? You know, God took the earth and made a body, and then, as Bible says, blew the life air in the body, and then the man came to life. And scientists said, yeah, sure. And he took the earth. And God said, no, if you claim you can do everything I do, then get your own earth. So, yeah. I mean, they claim that they can create life, right? But in their, test tubes, right? Instead of mother's womb, they can create life, but they didn't create life. That test tube is just a replacement for the womb. But the life comes from life. Without man and woman, there is no possibility of creating a human being. And so, yeah, creation, whatever creation is there, as Bhagavatam describes, is just a secondary creation. We just move elements around. And so by putting elements in a new way, so we become very proud, okay, I've created something special. I've done something no one have done before. Actually, we don't know what was have done before, because everything was already done so many times. But the things got forgotten in time. And so people think, okay, I have invented something new. There is nothing new. And so, but, you know, everyone wants to feel himself creator, achiever. And so, okay, Krishna is allowing this illusion to go on. And for this reason, everybody is suffering. Because everybody wants to be God, right? Because God is the enjoyer and controller, right? And so, this is why we come to this world. Of course, in terms of enjoyment, there was no reason for us to come to the material world, because in the spiritual world, there were plenty of enjoyment. But one thing was missing, and that is control. And we come here for control, for the sake of controlling, trying to, instead of serving God, because in the spiritual world everything is clear. Ekaleshvara Krishna Rasava Pritya. There is only one Lord, Krishna, and everybody else is his servant. And so that was really missing. We could not get the position of the controller in the spiritual world, and this is the reason we come to the material world. Try to be gods, try to create something out of nothing. And so, at the end, all we create is trouble. Trouble for ourselves and trouble for others. And so, of course, the great devotees, and we're lucky because in our universe, Lord Brahma is the great devotee. And, great devotees, they always compassionate towards the conditioned souls, and so they try to get
them out of trouble. And so Lord Brahma gave that knowledge, which is now repeated by Lord Shiva to the Prachetas. This is called parampara, passing the knowledge without any deviations. Original product, not corrupted. Right? Even though it gets corrupted by time, as in the course of time, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that evam parampara praptam imam rajarshe vidu sakalaneha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. Right? That I originally gave this knowledge and it was passed down through the chain of disciplic succession for saintly kings to learn. But in time, there was a yoga nashta, the connection was broken, right? And so, therefore, there is a need to reintroduce this knowledge. So, regularly, this knowledge gets lost. You probably know this, how it works, Chinese whispers, right? That whatever message is, it gets so corrupted at the end, you cannot even recognize that, right? And so, yeah, it's the nature of the material world that everything gets distorted. I think yesterday we discussed that, right? All the information we get goes through the three things: deletion, distortion, and generalization. So it's very confusing. And that's why there is a need to reinforce or, you know, purify the message again. And so either the Lord or his empowered representatives, they do it regularly. And so here, two Mahajans, two pure devotees of the Supreme Lord, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they are teaching others, such as Prachetas, this pure knowledge. And what is the aim of this pure knowledge? And this is very interesting because this purpose speaks about Varnashram Dharma. Varnashram Acharavata Purushana Parapuman. Varnashram Dharma is the perfect scientific system of advancement in human society given by the Lord. And this is the foundation of Sanatan Dharma. Without Varnashram Dharma, Sanatan Dharma is not really possible. And so, actually, Prabhupada said that 50% of his mission was not completed. It's very interesting that from our standpoint, Srila Prabhupada was one of the greatest achievers in the history of mankind, right? Considering what he has done. But from Srila Prabhupada's standpoint, he said he could only accomplish 50%, and half of his work was not completed. This is what he said before he left this world. And what was the last 50%, the remaining 50%? That was Varnashram Dharma. He said, I gave you spiritual knowledge, I gave you spiritual practices, but what I didn't have enough time to complete was to establish a social structure based on spiritual knowledge and practices. And again, connecting back to the first purpose of ISKCON, and as I say, there is a big and very good reason why the first purpose of ISKCON is first. And first things first, right? Even though it seems to be, from our
narrow religious point of view, right? And there is a good reason why religions create so much havoc in the world. Because religions oftentimes make people very proud. Oh, I own God. God belongs to me. I am God's empowered representative, right? And all of you better do what I say or else God will show his wrath. And if God will fail, I'll help him. Like that. So therefore religions, they cause so much trouble in the world, right? Because people claim to represent God, but it doesn't mean that they do it right. And that's why some people are praying to God, please save me from your followers. And so, we don't want to be in this category. That someone would pray to God to be saved from us, I'm sure. And we can also understand that the word religion does not exactly apply to Krishna consciousness, right? This is what Srila Prabhupada explains in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita on the basis of what Ramanujacharya explains, that religion is something which is created in the history. Religion is something which is meant for certain people in certain circumstances given at a certain time, right? And so because religions have beginning in the annals of human history, that's why religions have end. But Krishna consciousness is not another religion. It is Sanatan Dharma. And unlike all religions, Sanatan Dharma is beginningless and therefore it is eternal. And it is applicable to all living entities at all time and in all circumstances. And so this is what we practice, that Bhakti Yoga is actually Sanatana Dharma. I remember speaking at Interfaith panel at Dell Company, and that was in Texas, where they have the headquarters, and one participant asked us, you know, we had representatives of four denominations, and someone said, what is the greatest misunderstanding, what are the greatest misunderstandings, common misunderstanding about about your tradition? And so I have to say that common misunderstanding about Krishna consciousness or ISKCON is that we are mixed up with Hinduism. But Hinduism, even though it's connected to Krishna consciousness, it is the origin of Krishna consciousness. And Hinduism is actually a corrupt version of Sanatana Dharma, right? Instead of worshipping the Supreme Lord along with his associates, demigods and devotees, people started worshipping certain demigods separately and started imagining that these demigods are the Supreme Lord, right? So that's the corruption. And so one lady, one Indian lady came up to me later, she said, but you know, why do you think that Krishna consciousness is separate from Hinduism? And I said, it's not separate in the same way as root cannot be separate from the tree. It's the origin of Hinduism, but what's understood under the banners of Hinduism is very wrong idea at the moment. It's basically very sentimental practice deprived of spiritual knowledge. And that's the reason Srila Prabhupada instituted daily classes based on his books. Right? Because his books, they help us to understand what Sanatana Dharma or Bhakti Yoga really is. And yes, if Krishna consciousness would be another religion, then why Krishna would say in the end of Bhagavad Gita, Savadharma Parityaja, Mamekam Praja, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. And Prabhupada was saying many times that Krishna consciousness is not another religion. What to speak of sectarian faith? It's a spiritual science applicable to everyone. And so this is the most important thing about Krishna consciousness, that it is meant for all. And therefore, first purpose of ISKCON is the most important thing for us, the most important focus, should be the most important focus in our lives. And again, it is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and teach all people the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and achieve real unity and peace in the world. And it's really hard for many people because, as we mentioned, this purpose does not even mention God, what to speak of Krishna, right? And so that's very broad, and most of the people have very narrow consciousness, so it doesn't fit in. And whatever does not fit in, people just tend to ignore. But actually, as we mentioned on the first day, the first and foremost sign of spiritual entrepreneur or spiritual leader is thinking big. And big thinking is intrinsically connected to Krishna consciousness. Why? Because Krishna is the biggest personality of all. Right? And Krishna's thinking is the biggest thinking. Like Srila Prabhupada, when he had first experience of flying on the airplane, he was very amused, you know, Prabhupada liked it. He liked that new experience. And so he actually took his seat near the window and he was looking down. And he told to his secretary, just see how small everything looks from this height. All the houses, they're like matchboxes and all. And then he actually put it in Krishna conscious perspective immediately. He said, just imagine how it all looks like from Krishna's point of view. If for us it looks so small and insignificant, right? What to speak of Krishna? So that's called transcendental level. But yes, Krishna has the broadest consciousness of all. And so actually Krishna consciousness means to broaden our consciousness, right? That is the sign that we really advance in Krishna consciousness, when we see things in a broad perspective. And this is what Bhagavatam emphasizes, and Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse many times. Akama sarvakamava moksha kama udanati tivrena bhakti yogina ajata purusham param. That whether one does not have any desires or full of desires or desiring liberation, if one has, as Prabhupada says, broader intelligence. Normally we say broad-minded, right? But same thing, broad consciousness. Udarati. Udara means broad, and thi means intelligence. So that's the direct translation of the Sanskrit, broader intelligence.
Tibrena Bhakti Yogana, then one can be very focused in his practice of Bhakti Yoga. Tibrena means like laser or Sanskrit word says sunray. You know, we can use the analogy of laser ray. You know, very focused and very powerful. Yajata Purusham Param, one can be very focused in one's practice of Bhakti Yoga and achieve supreme perfection. So these things seem to be contradictory. How can one has very broad consciousness, or how broad consciousness, the broader one's consciousness is, the more focused one's practice of Bhakti Yoga is, right? How the broadest can be focused with the narrowest. So anyone has any idea how broad consciousness can help us to become very much focused, narrowly focused on Krishna?
So I guess maybe if you have a broad consciousness means you are able to see everything in Krishna and Krishna in everything.
Yes, very good. Yes. Yamam Pashyati Sarvatra, Sarvam Chumaya Pashyati, Tasyahamna Pranashyami, Sachamena Pranashyati. This is what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, right? Rikeshwari Prabhu knows the translation of this verse.
For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, I'm never lost, nor
he is lost to me. Yeah, nor he is lost to me. Very good, thank you. Yeah, anyone else wanted to say something about this? Yeah, this is exactly the idea. That broad consciousness means you see how everything is connected to Krishna, how everything belongs to Krishna. And if you see that, you will naturally be focused on how everything should be used in Krishna's service. Right? So this is the connection between broad and narrow. And this is the whole idea of Varnasram Dharma. To become Krishna conscious, to become God conscious. And so this is very important for all of us to be Krishna conscious, not just in the temple and not just during our japa time or kirtan time, but to be Krishna conscious all the time in all circumstances. And what's the first step? Srila Prabhupada specifically indicates the difference between Kanishta and Madhyamadhikari is what? We have a few young sages here. They can tell us what's the difference between Kanishta and Madhyama. Immature or mature devotee? What's the main difference? Anyone? Yes.
Kanishtha Adhikari sees Krishna only in the deities.
Yes, very good. That Kanishtha Adhikari sees Krishna only on the altar. And yeah, so this is God, and he only respects Krishna, right? Why he respects Krishna? Because Krishna keeps smiling at him and keeps quiet. Just imagine, you know, someone always keeps smiling at you and keeps quiet. Oh, good person. But what he is failing to understand? Yeah, that Krishna is everywhere, and in the first place, where Krishna is situated? In the hearts of other people. So Kanishtha Adhikari only respects Krishna on the altar, but he doesn't give respect to other people. And if someone is very much Kanishtha, he doesn't even know how to respect other devotees. Right? So, but when one becomes Madhyam, then one understands that, yes, Krishna is not only on the altar, Krishna is not confined to the altar, right? Like someone challenged Srila Prabhupada. Why do you say God comes to this world? And Prabhupada's response was, anyone can stop him. So that's very much Kanishtha mentality, that God is limited. No, God is not limited. And so, yes, he is not just on the altar, he is also in the hearts of other living entities. And so, what is the attitude of Madhyama towards other devotees? How does Madhyama Adhikari treat other devotees? Yeah, friendship. And so, that's the sign that we are gradually developing as Madhyama Adhikaris. We have no problems with any devotees. Young or old, advanced or immature, we understand, okay? These people are all striving to become Krishna conscious, so we appreciate that. And we behave in a friendly way towards all of the devotees. Even though sometimes not all the devotees might be friendly to us due to whatever their conditioning, right? But mature devotee, Madhyama Adhikari, is always friendly to other devotees regardless of their attitude towards him. Their attitude towards him does not affect him. That's Madhyama. That's why it is called Nishtha, right? It is opposite to Kanishtha. Kanishtha means unsteady flickering, right? Very much depending on circumstances, other people. Someone smiled at me, someone said good thing, okay, I like this devotee. Someone didn't smile at me, someone said something which I didn't like very much, so I don't like this devotee. So that's all Kanishtha mentality, right? We fail to recognize a simple thing, that everyone is just an instrument in Krishna's hands. And who is Krishna? Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. He is the friend of everyone. So no matter how things turn out and no matter how I am treated, I understand, okay, Krishna is behind and Krishna is my best friend. And so I don't mind. I understand, okay, someone might be influenced by ignorance or what to do. Someone is sick. But it doesn't matter that our attitude is changing towards these people, right? And my spiritual master gave a very interesting example from his own life, that how Madhyama Adhikari is supposed to treat others, even though others might mistreat him. And he had to undergo some surgery, and this was a serious surgery done under the general anesthesia, they put him to sleep, right? But somehow they didn't give him a sufficient dose of that, whatever they smell, gas. And so it happened that he woke up in the middle of the surgery. And, you know, anyone who knows his life history, he's been trained as Marine in US Army, right? And, they have been trained to respond very swiftly to the attacks, right? And so you can imagine, he said, I'm waking up and I see the man with the mask on his face and with the bloody knife in his hand.
And so he said, my spontaneous response was, you know, I just punched him in the nose. And did not, you know, because I was in this, you know, hazy consciousness, I did not figure out if he was my surgeon. And so he said, you know, he was holding his nose and he said, please give me more of the anesthetics, you know, give him gas. And so they put him back to sleep. And then, after it was all over, and you know, he was in the in a ward, and then actually he remembered the episode, and he said he felt so bad because he realized what happened. And then he was thinking, how do I, you know, like, look in my surgeon's eyes now, because it was a serious military punch. And then, you know, he said, the surgeon enters into my ward, and I'm lying there, and you know, his nose is band-aided, and he started apologizing. He said, doctor, I'm very sorry for what I have done. And doctor said, don't worry, you are not in the right state of consciousness. It's all okay. And so he gave that example to bring an analogy of a devotee who is also like a spiritual doctor, right? And he's treating patients, and some patients are not in the right state of mind. And that's why they might say or do very strange things. And sometimes these things might be even harmful. But if we are in the, you know, right state of mind ourselves, we can understand, okay, what to do. These people are undergoing treatment. And that's why it's just occupational hazard. Like, you try to help others, but they might not be appreciative of that. And maybe there was some mistake from my part also, like we've discussed last year when we spoke about life without conflicts, right? Whenever conflict arises or whenever the problem arises, one of the questions, as Adipuru Prabhu mentioned, should be, what have I done wrong? And so, naturally, what the surgeon has done wrong, he allowed insufficient amount of the drug to be administered to the patient, and that's why the patient woke up in the middle of the surgery, and so it was his mistake for which he suffered. So all of us are suffering due to our own mistakes. Sometimes we might feel that we are innocent victims, but according to the Vedic version, such thing does not exist. Innocent victim. And so, yes, this is the sign, the first sign of our advancement, that we have no problems with anyone who is chanting Hare Krishna, no matter how good or bad people are. And sometimes, yes, even those who chant Hare Krishna, they might exhibit some trends which are not very inspiring, unfortunately, yeah, because people are under treatment, right? It's not that everyone who just walks into the doors of ISKCON temple immediately, you know, becomes a saint. It takes time. And understanding that and being okay with that is the first sign of spiritual maturity, right? And so second sign of spiritual maturity is understanding that other traditions, they're also connected to the same Supreme Lord, to the same Krishna. And other people, they're also on the path of their spiritual advancement. They may not follow the same strict rules, like we have four egotic principles, and this is very rarely found
in other traditions, but we can understand manushyanam sahasrishu kashchid yata disitaye yata tamakisidanam kashchin mambetya tatvata, as Krishna explains in the seventh, in the beginning of the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. What does he say? Rikeshwari, you remember the translation?
Yeah. Only out of thousands of men, one person will come to me.
And out of all this?
Only one of
them. Yes. Yes. And out of all who are striving for perfection, only one hardly knows me in truth. So we can understand devotees are very, very rare personalities. That's why you can see how many people live in Bangalore. 5 million. And how many devotees we have in the community? Not even 5,000, right? Yeah?
Many are called, few are chosen.
Yeah. So very few. So devotees are very rare, because our standards, you know, it's like four regular principles and 16 rounds every day. This is just for beginners. Then it goes on increasing. Early morning, chant, not just 16 rounds, but, you know, 24 hours a day, as Prabhupada said on one of the previous verses. Full engagement in devotional service. Read all Prabhupada's books, 60 volumes, and once you finish, go over again. And once you finish, go over again, go over again and again and again, etc. Then take courses and take, you know, it's like, I mean, sometimes you might wonder, will it ever end, increasing all the standards? So we can understand, yeah, Krishna consciousness is for very, very rare few special souls.
Unending food. Unending ocean.
Yeah. And so that's why, yeah, what we discussed yesterday, devotees are very special, very rare, and really amazing souls. And of course, when we are in too close proximity, as the saying goes, familiarity breeds contempt, and we fail to appreciate how amazing and how wonderful devotees are. And yeah, sometimes, I mean, devotees do mind-blowing things, amazing things, but hardly anyone appreciates that. And this is like so strange. I mean, I traveled to one temple in America, which is in Houston, in Texas. And I found out that one elderly gentleman, one elderly devotee, Tamal Krishna Maharaj disciple, has actually created the biggest community and temple complex in the entire Western world, single-handedly. I mean, temple, community hall, residential quarters, restaurant, shop, you name it, all like massive, at least $20 million, American dollars, invested in that project. You know, huge, huge territory, their own farm next to the temple, in the city, in the heart of Houston. And I was like, who have done that? Because, okay, maybe in India we have bigger projects, but there is nothing like that in the Western world. You know, it blew my mind, the scale of it, and the beauty of it. And, you know, I thought maybe some guru behind, somebody, you know, very famous, with plenty of disciples, with lots of resources, financial resources. And I was pointed out, this elderly Gujarati devotee, this is what he did all of this. I was like, wow, how this is possible? Yeah. And so I appreciated him a few times. In class I just shared, you know, how impressive it was. And I actually learned that in all the years he was never really appreciated, even once, by what he did.
Because, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. And this is very unfortunate. That's why, yeah, I think I'm in a very advantageous position, because if you move around so much, you cannot develop familiarity. So you always see that from the observer's perspective, and it's easy to appreciate how much wonderful service devotees are doing. And so, but yeah, it's really important for us to understand how rare the devotees are, because most people, they cannot even start devotional service, because, you know, it's too challenging for them, the standards are too high for them. They still want to believe in God, they still want to practice something, some service, do some service, but they want to be on the Amado, where there are no challenging standards, right? And so this is all other faiths. But we should still appreciate that, yes, despite of maybe their weaknesses, these people still want to advance spiritually, they still want to serve God, and at least we can understand they are on the path. And if they follow their own tradition properly, one day they will achieve perfection, they will come to Krishna. And I have seen these examples many, many times in my life. And I mean, we have many devotees in our society who actually come from different traditions, right? And their practice of their tradition actually brought them to Krishna finally. And so that's why mature understanding is appreciating anyone who believes in God and who is trying. Even there are traditions in this world who are not connected to God at all. Like Kali Yuga brought the phenomenon of non-theistic religions. It's amazing. It's a religion, but when you come to, you know, who is God, you know, it's like, yeah, you come to the altar and it's empty. No one. There is no God. But still it is religion. And the brightest examples are Buddhism and Jainism. They are considered to be non-theistic religions, because there is Dharma there, but there is no God. But still, people follow Dharma, so Dharma helps them to become purified and gradually come to God, come to understanding of God. And so it's like, you know, we have different traditions. Certain traditions, they have God, but very weak Dharma. Other traditions, they have strong Dharma, but no God. So something is missing. But still, we can understand that at least people are connected to Dharma and Supreme Lord one way or the other. And that's why they are still better than materialistic people. And very mature understanding is to respect and appreciate every single human being. Because Krishna tells in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that of all species of life, the most dear to me are human beings. And you can see human beings, they even resemble Krishna, right? Radha Krishna. So men are made after image of Krishna, and women are made after image of Radharani, right? So human beings are very close to Krishna. And because, yeah, they have developed intelligence, which can help them to understand Krishna. And so that's why mature devotees appreciate all human beings as potential devotees, right? But if you are on the topmost level of Krishna consciousness, then you can appreciate and respect every living entity, regardless of the form. And so
speaking about it because the previous verse mentioned very important word, which is adritaha, with great reverence. Reverence means respect. And so it is very important that we develop that respectful attitude. Amanina manadana, as Lord Chaitanya said, respecting everyone and not expecting any respect towards ourselves. So that is the perfect condition for us to chant the holy name and advance. And incidentally, it's very interesting, you know, certain things Prabhupada said are pretty confusing for the beginners, like myself. And so when I heard that Prabhupada said every Indian is intrinsically Krishna conscious, that Krishna consciousness is in every Indian. And that kind of made me puzzled, because I was thinking, in India many people, they worship not necessarily Krishna, but they worship, you know, Shiva, Ganesh, Durga, so many objects of worship, Kartikeya, Murugan. And some of them, they are not even following Hinduism, they are Christians or Muslims or some other faith. Or some of them are not even following anything, just ordinary materialistic people. So why Prabhupada says that every Indian is intrinsically Krishna conscious? And actually, by visiting India and by living in India for quite a while, I realized, because what Prabhupada meant, because Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness will conquer the world by education and culture. And we can understand that education is theory and culture is practice. And if you look at very common Indian culture, it's all about respect, right? Very high level of respect. And we can understand, and broad-minded attitude, right? That, I mean, India was probably the only country which was never fanatical about any religions and was allowing what you call it, pluralism of the religious practices, because it actually comes from Krishna consciousness, this broad-mindedness. So this broad-minded attitude and respect, that's very typical Indian culture. And because Indians, almost all Indians, they have that culture, that's why it's very easy for them to accept Krishna consciousness. That's why Prabhupada said that we don't even need to worry about making Indians Krishna conscious, because they're already there, right? We need to focus on how to make Western people Krishna conscious. Yeah, because culture, this is the most powerful thing we have. And it is very important to understand that Krishna consciousness is primarily culture, and then everything else is secondary. Philosophy is just to help us understand and appreciate Vedic or Krishna conscious culture. And that is the essence of culture. Trinada Pisa Nishina, Darora Pisa Ishuna, Amani Namanadana Kirtaniya Sadahari. That to be more humble than the blade of grass, to be more tolerant than the tree, and respect everyone without demanding or even expecting any respect for oneself. So only in this state of mind one can always chant the holy names of the world. Anyway, I've spoken longer than I should be. Again. But anyway, if anyone has anything, yes.
Mother, you were mentioning that we should not expect respect. So many times we read in Bhagavatam how great sages, even Narada Muni, who got offended at me the first. We know that the other dynasty got killed because they were disrespectful. So, I don't know how to take that, how to reconcile everything. How much of, if they agree, it's if they did not expect respect, then shouldn't have any reaction. How that does it go? Does it mean that we should not react, or we should not?
Yeah, very interesting that if we should not be expecting any respect, then the sages directly associated with Lord Krishna in Dwarka, they should not be expecting any respect, and why they became angry at Samba and his friends who started mocking them, right, and cursed them. And same thing with Narada Muni, right? When he was passing by Nalakumara and Manigrihi, he also cursed them. And we can see many, many instances of very exalted Vaishnavas, not just ordinary Vaishnavas, but associates of the Lord, pure devotees. And they demand the respect and they even curse people if they don't get the sufficient respect. How that is tying with the third verse of Sushastakam? That's a very good question. Yeah, actually, there are two levels. Level of practice and the level of perfection. Sadhana and sadhya. And so even in the material world, that certain things professionals can do, laymen should not try. Right? Like you might come across some videos with the warning, don't try that at home, right? Because it's dangerous. And so the same thing applies to spiritual life, that if someone is practitioner, then general rules are applicable to the practitioner. But if someone is perfect, they can actually do something which seems to be breaking the rules because they actually know what they're doing. And we can see Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada was, for example, sometimes very harsh with people, right? And saying very heavy things. One time Prabhupada gave a class to a big audience and he was using his, you know, like arsenal. You know, he had those, you know, heavy words, fools, rascals, pigs, hogs, dogs, asses, you know. Prabhupada had the whole zoo to throw at people. Right. And so, and he was using all these things, you know, he was like firing at people, these things. And then he came back after this class and he was laughing and laughing. And the disciple said, why do you laugh, Srila Prabhupada? And Prabhupada was saying that for a good hour I was calling them, you know, dogs, asses, hogs, and all these, and at the end they were clapping. But it is very important, and Prabhupada said, don't imitate. What I can say, you cannot say. And unfortunately, this instruction is heavily violated. There are plenty of devotees who try to imitate Srila Prabhupada with very negative results, right? Because they are not there. They don't have Prabhupada's consciousness to say what Prabhupada, you know, could say. And so in the same way, you know, these great sages, they could actually curse people for their benefit. And their curses would work. But, you know, when it comes to us, actually, I think it's a blessing of Kali Yuga that all the brahmanas and devotees, they don't have those powers. Otherwise, we can only imagine what would happen, right? All the curses and counter-curses. Like which Daksha Yagya, yeah, that describes. And so, yeah. I mean, it's actually Kali Yuga blessing. Otherwise, we would, never have anyone practicing devotee. But everyone would finish each other with curses and counter curses. But you know, you can see that those great personalities, they act as perfect instruments in Krishna's hands, and whatever they do is motivated by compassion. And so it's like one disciple of Srila Prabhupada, Sakshi Gopal. Actually, there are so many stories like that, but this is one instance that they were driving Srila Prabhupada through central London. And if anyone has been to London, you know that Saturday is the shopping day for the whole country. They go crazy shopping. I mean, it's very dangerous to distribute books, even though there are many people on the streets. But if you try to stop someone, especially ladies, and if they see the sign sale, and if you try to stop them with books, they can actually run over you, running to the sale, right? And so, Prabhupada was going in the car through the central London, and he saw all these shopping madness people running around this, you know, the shops, etc. And then he started saying, "Oh, all these people are such fools and rascals," and using all the, you know, heavy words. And it appeared like Prabhupada was upset with these people, but then Sakshi Gopal Prabhu said he was sitting next to Prabhupada and he looked into his eyes, and Prabhupada was crying, and he said, "How these people can be saved?" So he was angry and he was using all these heavy words, but his anger was motivated by love, not by false ego or anything in the material world. And so, you know, it's like loving parents. They can be angry with the children if children do something dangerous, right? If a child is trying to, you know, like do something dangerous, the parent, the loving parent might shout at the child, right? Just to scare the child away, just to stop him, prevent him from doing something dangerous. But these so-called anger is motivated by love, right? And so that's the idea, that unless we have this kind of love Srila Prabhupada had, if we try to do it at home, if we try to imitate Srila Prabhupada, it might produce very negative results.
So it just so happens sometimes as new devotees that they clash of other devotees. And even though we are here that there are, like, we should come up to the level of Madhya Madhikari, we should not do that, it might happen again and again.
So, we might clash with the devotees.
Yeah.
Or other devotees might clash.
Like me.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So even though we can hear that theoretically, like we should not do that, but still it can happen again and again. We really know how to do it, but still it happens. So we have some advice how to put it from theory.
Yeah, I mean, as long as we practice, mistakes are almost unavoidable. And so, yeah, it might happen. But then, you know, once we see that, okay, I was not behaving in the right way, you know, the best way is to apologize to the devotee and try to never do that again. Sometimes, you know, it's like the, again, life without conflicts principle, that conflict means mistakes are done by both sides. You know, it's absolute rule that one hand will never clap. For clap, you need both hands. So, and it is possible that the opposite party contributed much more than me. But if I realize I still contributed something, then I can apologize for my side. And clear my conscience, right? So this is the way. Yeah, he said first, you want to ask your question?
It's written in the translation that Brahma is the master of all the creators. But Krishna is also the creator, then how can we understand?
Yeah, Brahma is the master of all the creators, and Krishna is not defined in Vaishnava theology as the supreme controller or creator or destroyer or even maintainer. We can see that all these functions of creation, maintenance and destruction, he outsourced to Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. And officially the Supreme Lord is not Krishna, but it is Narayana. So that's why we understand Krishna not as Supreme Controller, but as Supreme Enjoyer. And it's very interesting that God, officially God, means G-O-D, right? Generator, Operator and Destroyer. And we can understand that Krishna, as he is, he doesn't do these things. He is not involved in this. His business is pure enjoyment. And so that's why he is the supreme enjoyer. And Krishna is not even happy, we can see, when he is addressed as the Supreme Lord. Krishna doesn't want to be the God. Krishna doesn't want to be God. He just wants to be a cowherd boy, playing with his cows and friends. And incidentally, he is the source of all gods. That is the mystery of the Vedic literature, right? That's very few people know who Krishna is. And so, yes, Krishna is not doing all these divine functions. He is outsourcing them to his avatars and others, right? He's just enjoying life. So this is who Krishna is. Wow. Looks like voting or something. Okay, let's give boys chance. Even though I'm really nervous because these boys, they ask the kind of questions which really are explained only in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we are only studying for 4th canto. So I'm a little nervous whether I will have enough knowledge to answer their questions. Yes. Yeah, again, familiarity breeds contempt because for Indians, Krishna consciousness is something very familiar. They don't appreciate it as much as Western people. Prabhupada said, Indians are very close to Krishna, but they turned away from Krishna. They tend to turn away from Krishna. But Western people are very far from Krishna, but they are facing Krishna. They are moving towards Krishna. So yes, but yeah, actually we should have both understand and appreciate Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada started with Western people because in India people didn't appreciate Krishna consciousness, right? But once Prabhupada came back with so many Westerners, Indian people thought, wow, they practice our Dharma, maybe something valuable our Dharma still has to offer. So Indians started taking up Krishna consciousness, looking at the example of Western people.
If some people, why do the people get reaction if they are not in the devotee and they don't know that what they do, they get a reaction?
Why people get reaction if they don't know that they might be getting a reaction? Well, Prabhupada said, law is law, whether one knows or don't. Like, if you kill someone, and then you say, oh, sorry, I didn't know that. In your town, it's not right, you know, it's against the law. Because I come from some wild island and, you know, we used to do that. But still, if you break the law, you go to jail, right? Or you get punished. Like Prabhupada said, driving on the opposite side of the street, if you do that, you'll be punished by the law. So yeah, the ignorance, you know, the lack of knowledge of the laws does not relieve one from the reaction. So that's why it is so important for us to help people know the laws of God, know Shastra, because this is how Prabhupada defines Shastra as God's laws, right? So that they are careful not to break those laws and not to get reactions.
Thank you very much. Maharaj, how the three modes of material nature, they affect our qualification to be Uttama, Dhyama, Kanishtha?
Well, ignorance is symptomatic of Kanishtha, you know, between ignorance and passion. So between passion and goodness, that's Madhyama. But transcendence, that's Uttamadhika. Right?
Yes. Can devotees from another tradition obtain prema in some stage of their path, religion, or they can obtain that kind of spiritual stage?
Yeah. So Prabhupada was making comments about Francis of Assisi, that when, you know, he heard that he was addressing like even birds and animals like brothers and sisters, he was asked, what is the level? And he said, oh, this is love of God. That's, you know, so yeah, there are examples like that.
That members of another tradition also can go into Goloka Vrindavan, for example?
Well, Goloka Vrindavan, that's different, and for that one needs to know Krishna. But by practicing any tradition, people can come to Krishna. And yeah, we can see evidence that in ISKCON there are so many devotees who used to practice either Islam or Christianity or some other thing, Judaism. So now they are practicing Krishna consciousness.
Maharaj, you mentioned about that without Varnashram Dharma, Sanatana Dharma cannot be achieved.
Yes.
So, well, generally when we come to Krishna consciousness, you know, we for many of us, we are not clear about Varnashram Dharma. And probably it will take a long time if ever we found out about our varnas. But then regardless, we still engage in Krishna consciousness, following the instructions of our spiritual masters and teachers. So, how do we understand this?
Well, varna means you have certain nature and occupation matching that nature, and it makes easier for you because it's natural to advance in Krishna consciousness. Because if you like doing what you do, you can get the best results and you can dedicate it to Krishna, right? But if you force yourself to do something you don't really like, Prabhupada speaks about it as emergency duties, right? Certain duties you have to do even though you don't like doing that. And we all have those emergency duties sometimes, you know. We have to do something we don't like, but we can understand that the state of emergency cannot last forever. Even I know one devotee, and he belongs to that special, you know, secret police forces, and he was doing all these special tasks and, you know, fighting with criminals and, you know, like most dangerous criminals, right? And then he gave it up after a while because, you know, it's like he has huge body, very strong, he was kind of born for that kind of kshatriya. But then, you know, he said he's been stabbed and wounded by bullets so many times, and he's been in and out of hospital, in and out of hospital, and his wife would go crazy because, I mean, every single day she knows what he is doing, and she thinks, you know, will he be alive or not? And so he said, you know, after a while, even that wears you down, you know. I mean, there are other ways how to, you know, apply one's kshatriya spirit rather than just dealing with all kinds of, you know, low-class people, criminals, and also being always in emergency, that is not natural. So, emergency duties can last for some time, but there should be like standard duties according to our nature. Last one, because we should finish. Wow, so many people like that.
Thank you, Maharaj. You see that, you know, you talk about the broad consciousness and you talk about Krishna consciousness. We you know, in interfaith kind of thing, Krishna consciousness is very accommodating for other religion. But then when you see from other religion perspective, they feel that our religion or our any other religion is a threat. And in fact, there are countries where you are not allowed to propagate. Or, you know, even in books or something, you come across, they are very stubborn. And how do you know, you are with interfaith?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's the same thing, life without conflicts, that if we face very strong reaction to us, that, of course, that's an imperfection from their side, but it means we also are doing something wrong. And I had one experience, I had few experiences, but one was very, you know, kind of impressive. When I traveled with my spiritual master, and he is very, you know, active in interfaith relations, and we were in Mongolia, and it is primarily Buddhist country. And so he requested the devotees to organize interfaith meeting with Buddhist leaders in Mongolia. So we came, and that Buddhist abbot, he came to meet us with maybe about 20 monks. It was a very big monastery. And we had about 15 devotees or so. So it was like not just two people, but two groups. And I could see on his face, because, you know, Hare Krishnas are very well known for being very aggressive and very radical, right? And so they came to that meeting and they were kind of very tense. They were thinking, okay, Hare Krishna will start converting us now or something. But then Indradyumna Maharaj came to the meeting dressed in Mongolian dress. And Bada Haridas Prabhu was also there, dressed in Mongolian dress. And they were like, wow, they are dressed in our, you know, traditional attire. Then the first thing Indradyumna Maharaj said, I'm very happy to meet you and I have high appreciation for your Buddhist culture because it produces high quality people and therefore we want to do something to support you in your culture and in your work. We want to help you. We want to serve you. And that Buddhist monk was very surprised. He said, why? And then Indradyumna Maharaj told him the story. He said, I met one young boy who was actually the son of a congregation member. And when he was 11 years old, on his own, he wanted to become a Buddhist monk. And even though his parents, especially his mother, was panicking, you know, like 11 years old, wants to become a monk, so she was totally against it, but he insisted and he went to the monastery and he became a monk. And he came to meet Maharaj dressed in the monk's robes. And mother came to Maharaj, she said, you know, can you talk my boy out of it? He wanted to become a Buddhist monk, this is not our tradition, this and that. And Indrajitna Maharaj said, he decided on his own to become a monk at 11? And mother said, yes, despite of all my, you know, whatever I was saying. And he turned to this boy and he said, how can you live? This is so austere in the monastery. And the boy said, yeah, I'm happy to have nothing. And he said, but what about toys? You're a small boy. He said, I don't need any toys. I only need my prayer beads and mantras to chant. I'm fully happy with that. Sleeping on the floor, I only have two sets of clothes, one which I'm wearing, the other one drying on the line, and I'm totally happy. And Maharaj said, whoa. And he turned to Bada Haridas Prabhu. He said, can you imagine this kind of boy in America? And Bada Haridas Prabhu said, no chance. He said, it's only here, so serious about spiritual life. And then he turned to the mother. He said, why do you want to talk him out of it? Because he's learning discipline, he's learning simplicity, he's doing his austerity. And, okay, he's practicing Buddhism, he's learning Buddhism, but, I mean, there are so many similarities in our philosophies. And it's really good for him to learn Buddhism. And plus, the choice of tradition should be volunteer. No one should be forced into anything, right? So, and you don't have Gurukul in here anyway, so why do you want him to stop? Let him practice. And then he told this Buddhist monk, these kind of people, you know, are only in here. And if your culture gives this quality of people to the world, we want to support it. And then this Buddhist monk said, but, you know, you belong to different tradition, why you want to support us? And Maharaj said, well, you know, we have many things in common. We, all of us, believe in karma, in reincarnation, and we have compassion as the top value, the top quality, and many other things. And plus, you know, all of us chant mantras, read Sanskrit, we have so many things in common. And plus, we believe that Buddha is avatar of Krishna. So we have no problem with your tradition, because Krishna started your tradition as avatar of Buddha. And this monk, he said, it's interesting because our scripture also say that Krishna is avatar of Buddha. Krishna is another form of Buddha, he said. And Maharaj said, you see, we have so many similarities, so we can work together. Tell us, what can we do for you? And this monk was so bewildered. He said, if you have such broad understanding, you know, we could let you give classes to our monks, and you could also preach to our congregation. And Maharaj said, thank you for the offer, but maybe we could help you with something. And then this monk said, you know, the way you chant your mantras is very attractive. So many people come and they dance with you, they chant with you. We cannot attract people like that. So if we could learn from you to chant mantras in such attractive way, that would be very nice. Could you please chant the mantra for us? So they requested kirtan. And we've done kirtan for half an hour and they were ecstatic. We didn't even bring instruments because we didn't expect that. But, you know, Maharaj's attitude and his openness and his humility just melted their hearts. And at the end of the kirtan, you know, Maharaj said, you have such a beautiful monastery and we want to chant one protection mantra to protect you from all troubles. And Buddhists, they love protection mantras. And so then we chanted, we sing their prayers. And at the end, they didn't want to let us go. They were like taking pictures with us and asking 108 times, when are you coming back? How can we work together, etc. So it was complete transformation. And I was thinking, this is what's missing. This kind of attitude is really missing. You know, it's like Prabhupada's advice was in like a needle, out like a plow. But sometimes, unfortunately, we see devotees there, they want to go in like a plow, and they just break their heads, and you know, people just resist, and they say, go away, not interested in you. So, you know, bhakti yoga is buddhi yoga, so it would be good to use our intelligence in dealing with other traditions especially. I'm afraid Shukadev Prabhu will curse me. So, therefore, all questions I'll be happy to answer individually, but officially we would have to stop the class. So thank you all very much for your live interest. Radha Radha Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.